This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many of the New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of this podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/sword. That's audiblepodcast.com/sword.
And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use offer code SWORD8.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
I'm Veronica Belmont.
And I'm Tom Merritt, and that's Dragon Con out there.
That's Dragon Con! It's a Dragon Con up in here!
Woo! Thank you all so much for coming. It's amazing.
This is, I think it's our fifth year here, and it's definitely still our favorite event, our favorite con that we go to all year, by far. You guys make it the most awesome.
And it gets bigger and badder in the good, bad way.
There's children in the crowd, so I'm going to try to keep my sailor mouth to a minimum on this episode.
So what are you drinking, Veronica?
Water.
It's the drink, well, for Dragon Con, it's not really the drink of choice.
It's not really, that's not at all the drink. The drink of choice for me last night was Ruinum.
Anybody know Ruinum?
And it ruined me. Yeah. It straight up ruined me. It's like brandy and wine, and it is a mess. It is a mess of a beverage.
Now, how many?
A delicious mess.
How many of you here are Sword and Laser listeners, subscribers, watch the shows?
Yay!
The majority. Awesome.
Thank
For those
you so
of you
much.
Who maybe who are just Jim Butcher fans and you're not familiar with Sword and Laser, we are an online science fiction and fantasy book club. You usually do this part of the show.
Yes.
I don't know what to say.
We are an online science fiction and fantasy book club.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
All of our discussions happen over on Goodreads. And, we post all our episodes up on swordandlaser.com. And, of course, all of it comes from you. I mean, you guys are the real reason we do this show. It's all the community discussions that we have, the book club aspect of the show. We've been going strong for 7 years now. So we've been podcasting for a long time with this show. And how many people were here last year for the show?
Awesome.
Yeah. How many people were in this room when we had Robert J. Sawyer on and he talked about my box? Yes, that happened. That was weird. But anyway,
awkward.
We're very excited to have Jim Butcher on the show today. He's, like I said, making his way up through the mass of people, the writhing flesh of Dragon Con, to come here and do the interview. He's like, no, don't talk about that. That's horrible.
Couldn't he have found some underground tunnels or something?
They exist, right?
Yeah.
I feel like I've been in the bowels of Dragon Con before. Oh.
I felt that way Friday. Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah, sure.
That was pretty awesome. But we do have a couple of announcements to make before Jim gets here. For one, we are very excited to announce that we are going to be joining Boing Boing as part of their podcast network as well. So we are still going to be a part of Frog Pants family. We're still going to come to all the Frog Pants events and everything. None of that will change at all, but we are hopefully going to reach an even bigger audience as well by being on Boing Boing.
Yeah, we're very excited that they're starting a bigger podcast network. And I don't want to spoil it for any other podcasters, but the names who are on the conference call we were with and on the email threads are pretty darn impressive to me. I'm fans of most of those people, so I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah, so that should be starting hopefully by the end of this month, or around thereabouts. So we're very excited. They're a great group of folks, and I think we'll fit right in with their craziness over there.
Also got some news about the Sword and Laser Anthology, which is fan-submitted works that'll be published in a book of science fiction and fantasy, Sword and Laser. And how many of you submitted?
Did anyone submit
here? To the Sword
here?
And Laser Anthology, a few
hi.
People. I know. I'm sorry. There's Foil and Phaser at foilandphaser.net because of the 1,000 submissions that we got. We only picked 20. And the good news is we've got most of those people signed up with their license and everything, so we're okay to use their story. And we should start the editing process of everything September 15th. Mm-hmm. So no publication date yet. We're still working out a lot of those details and the timing and all of that, but it's moving forward. And I can't wait for you guys to read these stories. Of the ones that we didn't accept, there are amazing stories that I still think of and I still remember now. And of the 20 that we did accept, I think they're incredible. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Awesome. We are still hopefully waiting for Jim Butcher to arrive. I was hoping that was maybe
are
him
any
trying
of you
to
Jim
get in the door.
No.
Are any of you Jim Butcher? No? 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 You? No?
No?
Lady? No?
No.
Okay. It's cosplay. I don't know. Anything's possible here at Dragon Con. Yeah, totally.
So there's our edit point.
That's our edit point where I will stop the show and edit it in post-production, so it seems like a seamless flow into the interview today.
Everything that we say from now until we introduce Jim Butcher will be between just us.
Yes. Did anyone
the live stream.
Has anyone been following along with Curse of Chalion this month for reading? Yeah. Lois McMaster Bujold fans in the house? Yes. That was a fantastic book. And we're starting a new book today? Tomorrow?
Tomorrow, officially, but I already started.
Don't
Did you start
us,
reading?
Tell us about it.
Yeah. What's it called?
The Demolished Man.
Oh, right.
You picked it.
I picked The Demolished Man, as I mentioned in the last episode, because the Hugo Awards are this weekend, and it's the 60th, am I doing my math right? 60th Hugo Awards. 1953, Alfred Bester won the first Hugo for The Demolished Man. So I figured this was a good coinciding of a laser book and an anniversary and a time to pick a book. It is extraordinarily modern in some ways for a book from that era, from 1953. Like, there's things that I catch myself going, wait a minute, this was written in 1953. That just seems like something that would come out of William Gibson's mouth or come out of a modern author. And then the next paragraph, you'll hit something that's like, wow, that's 1953. Whoa. So it's a really interesting read in that respect. But I think the overall vision of the future is really still very compelling. Have you started it yet?
No.
No?
I'm reading the VF pick for this month.
That's your standard answer to me.
I'm reading the books for the other book club. Are you guys familiar with my other book club? There's like this young man right here in the audience. I just can't say the word in front of him for some reason. He's okay? All right, Vaginal Fantasy. Vaginal Fantasy is the other book club.
Now he's more embarrassed that you did that.
I know!
Than he just said the name.
I know! I ruin everything. I'm destroyer of children.
Oh, that one.
Okay, here.
He's like, I'm reading that book too, actually. It's really
He's
good.
Like, yeah, it's great. It's fantastic. It's kind of like an Indiana Jones style,
really?
In Mongolia kind of situation. This magic and romance and all the stuff that we usually go for that book club.
All right.
Yeah.
What are you guys reading?
Yeah, should we either do some? I think we should actually take some questions real fast.
Yeah, we can take some questions. We'll save time for questions for Jim, of course, at the end. But if you guys got questions about anything Sword and Lasery, just wave Andrew down and
he had a question. Yep,
he'll come bring you a microphone.
Yes,
so that everybody can hear you.
Hi, I assume that given that you're going to Boing Boing, that you're not going to be with Geek and Sundry anymore, or?
We have not been with Geek and Sundry since the
last April. So we're still huge fans of everything they're doing over there.
Unless you're on the other book club.
The other book club. I'm right. Still technically on Geek and Sundry with Vaginal Fantasy.
I really enjoyed it. I'm sad that you guys won't be making more, but.
Well,
we can't say anything about a return of a video show, but we're totally going to try to bring back the video show. I sent an email this morning to someone about it.
First steps, baby steps.
Yeah.
Baby steps.
It involved budgets and numbers and things like that. Pixel Core, the studio where we shot that series, has our set. Lem's still sitting there. Like,
Hanging out.
People go there and work at the bar because it's nicer than their
really?
Desks.
Really? It's really, they'll send us pictures. They're doing like paperwork on the bar, like having
a
drink.
So there's been
stuff.
A rear guard action as Alex Lindsay, who's awesome and the chief of Pixel Core, has been trying to get us to take the set and put it in storage because they need that space for other things. And the crew there has been really good at finding excuses that they can't move it yet this week. So the part of the email was getting ready to stave that off and go, wait a minute, we might need it. We might need to be shooting.
Yeah. So we're working on it. And if we do, in fact, if the show is coming back, we'll probably be calling on you guys.
They're cheering as much for your feat of getting in through the crowd as for anything else.
Anything else? Yes.
Crazy.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Jim Butcher.
Hi guys.
There we go.
Bless you. I'm right. Tom.
Hi. Hi. Nice to meet you officially.
Nice to meet you. Thanks for coming.
We had you on the video show that we were just talking about.
Yes.
Long ago.
Yeah, well.
It seems a year ago, maybe? Something like that?
It was a couple, maybe.
Yeah. So thank you for once again being on the show. How's your Dragon Con going so far?
It's hectic.
Yeah.
I know that feel.
All right, so we are going to kick off with some questions from our Goodreads forum, and then afterwards we'll open it up to the floor for questions from the audience here at Dragon Con. So our first question comes from Rob, and we're definitely going to talk more about the Codex Alera and Harry Dresden later on, but our first question is about the new series coming up, Cinder Spires. You guys excited? So what made you try your hand at steampunk?
About a year ago, I...
About a year ago.
I was trying several different projects, and I wanted to see kind of which got the most traction with my beta readers. And so I think I wound up writing three or four different things that was the beginning of a project just to see, you know, what kind of struck sparks. And the Cinder Spires was by far the one that got the strongest response. So I decided to go with that. I've been looking for what project to do next, and it's like, oh, okay, they like the steampunk. Cool. We'll do that.
So have you been big in the steampunk world? Like, is that an area that you follow very closely?
Nah, not terribly. I follow the costumery.
Nice.
I play a couple of steampunk LARPs, so beyond that, you know.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about what Cinder Spires will be, and for those who haven't heard about it.
Short story is it's a Hornblower meets League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Or Hornblower meets X-Men, really, is closer, but League of Extraordinary Gentlemen sounds steampunkier.
Yeah.
So...
Nice. Do you have any idea how many, is it going to be a long series? Is it going to be a trilogy? Do you have any ideas of that yet?
Right now, I've sold the first three books. If they like that, then we'll keep going. I see it as about nine books, and I don't know if we'll actually get to go that far or not. That's going to depend on the publisher and the audience.
I have a feeling you'll be fine.
Do you plan a similar release schedule for it as your previous books?
That's plan.
Can you give me some dates?
Plan is such a firm
word.
Like
a release date?
These are Rob's questions.
At least the next five books. That'd be great.
I've got to turn it in by July or by January 1st. The first book has got to be, the manuscript's got to be turned into them. I don't know how quick they're going to want to turn it around. I would anticipate it'll be out sometime next summer, but I'm not sure.
Okay. And then maybe a book every year or two?
About
after
a book
that.
A year is yeah. the plan.
Every 6 months? Okay. Every 2 weeks?
Every 2 weeks. Well, let's move on to Codex Alera a little. Eric has a question. He asked if the origins of the Roman Legion coming to Alera was based on the Ninth Roman Legion. I think you've said that was the inspiration before, right?
Well, indirectly, yeah.
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 He goes on to ask, I think, an interesting question. Will we ever see a story explaining, or maybe you've covered it, how they came to be there?
Maybe. I mean, it's something I could write, although the early history of the Alera books that I sketched out before I started writing it is just so grim. I mean, it's ugly. You know, the Romans showed up and they marched into a thunderstorm and wound up in Alera. And, you know, once they got there, there were all these other races there, and Romans did what Romans do, and Roman legions started conquering, and they wound up fighting tooth and nail, you know, to survive for several hundred years, and basically their society turned into this big collie death cult for a while, in order to keep going. This is my handler who I couldn't find, and so I had to come here and find it myself. And I'm sorry, she keeps interrupting.
It's okay, we found him.
Ah, right, I'm here. But it was just such a grim story. It wouldn't be very much fun to read. And it wasn't until, you know, they kind of went through all that and they finally got settled down, and then they had a society that was going somewhere. It's like, okay, these people are a little bit less psychotic. It'll be a little bit easier to tell a story about them. So it wouldn't be the story I'd want to write. But they had this whole nasty history and for a long time. So
yeah, it definitely, some of that is touched upon in the series, I think, for sure. And right. I can definitely see the hesitancy to kind of dig deep into that really dark past.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, the one thing the Roman legions were good at, they were good at marching into places and taking over. I mean, they did it almost everywhere. So
it sounds like you're not talking about a like George R. R. Martin, Joe Abercrombie darkness. You're talking about a like just slash and gore.
Yeah, right, yeah, basically.
Nothing,
yeah. Yeah.
Nothing else to it.
Crom.
Well, maybe we could hear some of the stories from before they showed up about the various races that inhabit Alera.
Oh, that's possible. I certainly haven't written off going back to the Alera books at some point, although I would probably go a little bit further into, I would probably go about 100 or 150 years into the future so you can see the fallout of what everybody did in the first series and what it's meant. And although you wouldn't have, you know, the same characters around, well, you'd have some of the same characters around because the Kanan would still be there. You would have like the descendants of the other characters, and the other idea I had was for the first class of new cursors that Aaron would be training, the Crow-Begotten Batman as he's become known on the fan forums, you know, and that would be fun because it would be a new class of cursors. It'd be the first Kanem cursor, and you know, the first Marat, and so
on.
Oh,
nice. How many people are fans of the Codex Alera series? They're some of my favorite books. I have not finished the Dresden Files series yet. I know. I'm like, I know. So no spoilers, you guys.
Tell him.
No spoilers, Jim Butcher. I think I was on like the fifth or sixth book. Oh, jeez.
I got her voicemail. Hang on. Look, I'm here. Don't panic. Stop texting. Okay.
He's fine.
Jim, I'm on stage. All right, bye.
Well, let's move into the Dresden Files now, because before everyone murders me on stage for having not finished the series.
You heretic.
I told you that the last time we interviewed, and I was like, I'm going to finish them. I'm going to get there. The problem with doing two book club shows is that suddenly you read for your living, and then you don't have time to read all the other things that you want to read. So feel bad for
Poor
me.
Poor Veronica.
Don't be mad at me.
She has to read for a living.
I know. Well, this first Dresden-related question comes from Jeffrey N., who writes, my wife loves the series, but hates Butcher for what he does to her boyfriend. Have you ever had a fan berate you during a signing? Because I'm afraid she may, if given the chance. For beating up on poor Dresden.
I'm trying to think if I've ever had a fan not berate me during a signing. No, I don't think so. Almost every, why do you do this to poor Harry? How can you do this to poor blank? And I often get asked that, you know, why do you torture your characters like that? And it's not that I like torturing the characters, it's that I like torturing you all. It's just that the characters happen to be the best way to get to you.
Right. Also, frankly, it wouldn't be much of a story if people didn't encounter problems and issues and horrible things happening to them.
That's called My Little Pony.
Yeah.
And any bronies in the audience?
Woo!
Yeah, all right.
How many of you like being tortured by Jim Butcher?
Thank you.
There's a whole track for that here. Alan wrote, how do you avoid grade inflation in such a long-running series as the Dresden Files? He explains the danger in each book has to feel as grave or more so than in the book before it. How do you prevent the whole thing from spiraling into fights between omnipotent beings?
Well, those aren't scheduled until much later in the series. And forethought, planning. You got to figure out where you're going and where you're going to end up and make sure that you pace yourself on the way there. You do it by establishing various sorts of threats and challenges. You know, there are some bad guys that just aren't too much of a threat to Harry and other bad guys that are just deadly dangerous. Not necessarily because they're more powerful, but because they're different. And so mostly that's just a matter of finding out, you know, which bad guy knows his weakness, you know, which bad guy knows how to get to him. Who's the guy who... My phone.
I love that you have the Star Wars theme as your ringtone.
Okay, yeah. You know. What else am I going to have, you know, as a ringtone? But in any case, you know, and the idea was all along I had a set number of series of books that I wanted to write, a number of books I wanted to write, and so I kind of knew how to pace myself. Okay, this is how I'm going to start laying out bad guys as I go along. And some of the bad guys were built to morph and upgrade as they went, and you know, they're still appearing and reappearing over time.
Nice. Our last Dresden Files related question comes from Jonathan, who says, Dresden is the quintessential urban fantasy private investigator. What's an odd profession that you'd like to see an urban fantasy protagonist take up? Like an urban fantasy chef or an urban fantasy accountant?
Gosh, I cannot imagine urban fantasy accountant. You know, as a terribly
this
interesting
job. This sounds like
job.
A new dare.
Unless it was like a forensic accountant, you know. Mm. One of those guys you hire to go in and track things down. I'd never even consider that question. I don't know. That sounds like a great story for somebody else who's really interested in it to write. You know,
yeah,
seriously.
Sure.
I mean, that's where good stories come from.
Yeah.
All right, some general questions, different Alan this time. One is curious to know if your writing speed coincides well with the publication speed. If Jim writes faster, has he ever considered self-pubbing any of his work, since the traditional houses don't like overlapping works from the same author publishing several works in a short period of time?
I've never really had an issue with my writing speed overlapping my publishing speed. Seriously, I mean, I tried to do three books in a year several years ago when I did the Spider-Man book, and that was like in 2005 or something like that, and I'm still behind schedule from that. So, no, I haven't really thought about doing that.
All right, and then Jane wants to know, I'd love to know if you're ever going to continue your life journal writing tips, and maybe if we get to see one of your character sheets that you had written for the Dresden Files to see how you went about it.
Maybe so. It's one of those things that, I mean, I enjoy writing my live journal. I enjoyed writing those. But at this point, all my extra time that I have is either going towards keeping me sane or else writing. You know, as my career has progressed, there's more and more time that you spend doing interviews and doing stuff that is not writing stuff but is related to your writing stuff. And you know, kind of more and more time has vanished, so it's become more of a challenge to arrange it so that, yeah, I do have my keyboard time every day that I can get in. And I'm sorry, I lost track of the question. I think it's mostly an issue for me of getting myself into the right frame of mind to get the work done, and I don't really need to. You know, to leap into too much more stuff to do that.
Do you do things to? What do you do to take a break from writing to get your mind fresh again?
A break from writing,
or is that just imaginary?
Yeah. Really, I don't really take a break from writing, because if you're a writer, either you are writing a story, or you are thinking about writing a story, or you are thinking about a story that you've already written, and that's pretty much what you do. You might be doing some other stuff along with that. In order to get set up for writing, I like to get away from things for a while and play some video games and kill some people online. You know, in the vein of I like torturing people.
Have you thought of starting a gamer tag collection just of your readers so you can know you're killing them?
Oh, I had never really considered it.
Yeah.
Mostly because I'm like one of those hyper competitive jerks online, and it's okay if I'm one more hyper competitive jerk,
right.
You know, talking smack at somebody across the internet, you know. But if I would hate to be, hey Jim, great, it's nice to see you. Yeah, die scum. Yeah, let's see. I'll punish you for using that grenade launcher, noob.
Learn to play.
Yeah.
Yeah. Adam wanted to know, he says authors constantly are working to tell stories in fresh ways, but we don't write in a vacuum. We're either inspired or influenced by what we've read. How do you take influence and inspiration from what you've read previously and keep the work original?
Mostly I just steal things whole and slap a coat of paint over it and redo it. Really, that telling original stories is something that happens when you tell a story. I mean, if we were all writing the same story, we took the same, and we took the same, you know, the same basic parts and said, okay, now write a novel. Your novel would come out very different from her novel, would come out very different from my novel, because we're very different people.
And you're a good writer.
Well, maybe. I mean, that's it's arguable. I would say I'm a good storyteller, not as much a good writer. But it would all come out very different because we're very different people, and we've had different life experiences. We have different focus of what is important to us in our lives. If I want to write, you know, I've got Jedi Knights in the Dresden Files. You know, they happen to use knights. They happen to use holy swords instead of lightsabers. But you know, come on, they're Jedi Knights, really. But they turn out very differently, have a very different feel because I'm a very different person than George Lucas is.
Thank God.
But really, don't worry so much about running over somebody else's stuff. If you see something that inspires you, that makes you excited, that gets you emotionally involved in a story, grab it and start working with it. Figure out how to make it your own story just by telling the story yourself, because your story is going to come out totally different than mine is. It's going to come out totally different than anybody else's.
Yeah, I mean, the Dresden Files are a good example. Detective stories have been told for a long time, but
yes.
But you were able to take it and take it in a whole new way.
Oh, wizard. Yeah. Magic. Yeah.
And I know we've asked you this before, but do you have any, and I know we have a ton of writers in our audience right now, what is your advice for writers who are either just getting started or trying to be published?
Oh, gosh, that's such a broad, open-ended question. Probably the most important thing is write. Now, when you finish something, start something else. When you are sending something out to see if it gets sold, don't wait to see if it gets sold. Start writing your next thing. Don't get stuck on the story that you've, on one story that you've written. Be focused on your next story. Get the next one done. One of the things that I do myself when I'm writing is when I get finished, as soon as I get done typing the end on the end of a manuscript, the first thing I do is open up a new file for a new book and type chapter one and try and get the first sentence of the new book down, because you can't get stuck in one spot. You know, don't get stuck rewriting the same book over and over and over again and thinking you're going to make it perfect. You don't want to write the perfect story. You want to write the next story.
Interesting. All right, so we have about a half an hour left over for questions. I think it would be easiest, because the room is so large, if we put the microphone over in this corner, and then people can line up if they want to ask a question.
So Andrew will go over
Andrew
here.
Andrew will be over here.
Find Andrew and just line up over here by the door.
And we'll give you guys a second to congregate.
Yeah.
That would be helpful in just making it a little more seamless, so we're not running around the room like crazy. I'm trying to help you, Andrew. Thank you. Okay.
Mr. Butcher, I'm a huge fan of all your work. I've read almost everything you've published. By far, my favorite is the Dresden series. And there's one thing about it that I find interesting. Harry seems to me a very chivalrous man who has a code of ethics with relation to women, and he upholds that very strongly. And in contrast to that, when you're writing these stories, there is a very physical way of describing women in it. Andy is always referred to as very large-bosomed. And through and through, especially when you get to the White Court, it seems that women are very described incredibly physically. And it always struck me as there was this huge contrast between Harry and the way women were described in the Dresden series.
I don't see the conflict. You can't be chivalrous and also notice a woman's beauty?
Well, you can, but also if every woman is beautiful.
Aww.
I thought there was more sentence coming there.
It seems like women are being objectified, and that's not what Harry would do, but it's how the books do.
Okay, if you say so. It's your opinion, and I respect it. I don't agree with it. You know, Harry gives descriptions of things in physical terms. I mean, almost everybody gets described that way. Everybody gets descriptions of this is what they look like. This is what their hair color and eye color is. Harry describes people except for when he's noticing, oh, girl, boobs, hips. Okay, because which is what men do. But the point is he describes things in very physical terms so that he could turn around and say, this is what this person looks like to the cops, because that's kind of the way he thinks. And also, it's a result of it's a result of his early years in professions where he did do a lot of work, where it's like, okay, I've got to be able to think in these terms. But as far as that goes, I don't think there's nearly so much noticing the physical attributes of somebody does not mean that you've lessened them as a person. If you think that I objectify women in the writing, that's another thing. I mean, and that's something I would also argue against, but. It's going to be something that's going to be subject to interpretation from a lot of different folks.
Thank you.
Based on what everyone else is going to say about being a big fan, reading everything, just ditto. A lot of us got turned away from the fighting and writing thing last night because of fire code. The room filled up, and then there was like 20 or 30 people who came to the door.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know that.
So for those of us who couldn't make it, I don't know if anyone else is here, what would be your advice distilled down writing an awesome fight scene?
The most important thing is to make sure that the action is clear, that you pay very close attention to the chain of stimulus and response and cause and effect that makes the fight happen. Try and break the fight down into a tennis match, something that is that simple to follow, where you've got the camera following the ball. The same thing has to be true with your fight. Real fights aren't at all like that. Real fights are messy and they're clumsy and they're over very, very quickly. But when you're writing in a book, you've almost got to have that same sort of flow that you get from a tennis match.
What do you think the purpose of a fight scene is when you put it in? What are you trying to convey?
It depends on what you're trying to convey, really. I mean, you know.
What are the kinds of things, I guess?
You do fights for dramatic effect. You do fights for comedic effect. You do fights to establish somebody's credibility in terms of what kind of threat they can represent to the story, or to establish who they are as a character. I mean, you can use them for all kinds of different things. I'm a big believer in violence as a tool for all sorts of. There's an entire palette of violence out there, and you can paint great pictures with it.
The more you say that, the more I'm convinced that I don't want to hear about the Roman Legion coming through the thunderstorm.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my gosh.
That's not a friendly palette. Thank you.
I guess I should have coordinated with my boyfriend before we both came up here because I was about to ask you the same question. So I apologize if there's any overlap with him. I really don't want to take up your time answering the same question again. But just in no other book compared to The Dresden Files have I so often had those moments where I'm on the edge of my seat, or I stand up and cheer. You know, you have things like, you know, Zombie Sue, or, you know, the entire ending of Changes. I guess my question is, as a writer, is are there any craft tips you can give for how to convey that, like, sense of just overpowering emotion, being in the moment when writing?
Yeah. Pay attention to the things that make you feel emotionally overpowered. If you run into a piece of music that makes you feel a certain way, if you're at a movie and there's a portion of the movie that evokes a very strong emotional response in you, if somebody's talking and they make you completely angry, pay attention to it. Go back and look at it if you can. Try and figure out why that stuff gets to you. And really, that's okay, we're going to get all Greek here and I'm going to say know thyself. But in doing that, you get to understand yourself a little bit better, and you start to understand why these emotions get to you. And then that helps you in turn understand how to torture them, because that's what you're doing. The business of writing is, and this is a cold way to say it, and I rejected it completely when I first heard it from my writing teacher. But the business of writing is the business of manipulating people's emotions, and if you can get them to love who you want them to love and hate who you want them to hate and cheer when it's time to cheer and cry when it's time to cry, then you've got a great book going, and that's what it's for. So in order to do that, though, you have to understand what gets your own emotions going in that direction. And so that's why I say when you've got something, pay attention to it. Try and get out and experience things. Sometimes go out kind of away from all the ambient city light and sit down in the country somewhere and just wait for it to get dark by yourself in the woods. That's an experience. And it'll teach you something. And start figuring out how to do stuff like that and how to get to yourself, and then you can get to everybody else too.
Thank you.
Very welcome.
I like to ask this of all the writers. It may be a little less pertinent since you write in so many diverse genres, but I found that most writers are also prolific readers when they're given the chance. What are some authors or books, like, outside of genres that you're known for that you're a big fan of?
Probably the biggest outside the genre would be Robert B. Parker. his Spencer books, and I love those. Let me think. I read a lot of military science fiction that I really enjoy. David Weber, John Ringo. I enjoy those guys a lot. Also over in science fiction, Lois Bujold is probably one of the most skilled writers alive.
We just finished Curse of Chalion as our monthly pick last month. It's great.
Lois, professionally speaking, I want to have her babies. Seriously, she into. Oh God, I wouldn't do that to her. But she seamlessly integrates character and world and story into One Piece better than any writer that I know, and can make you care about people better than any writer I know.
It's funny, one of the criticisms from our group about Curse of Chalion is one of the people felt there wasn't enough violence.
Not enough violence in Curse of Chalion.
We've been reading a lot of Grimdark recently.
Right. That's true, because there really isn't. Now that I think about it, there's really not a lot. Tons of drama, but not tons of violence. Although I like Paladin of Souls a little bit better.
I just started it. Yeah, it's great.
Paladin of Souls is great. But anyway, does that help? Okay, good.
Do you get a lot of chance to read outside
of? I make a lot of chance to read.
Good.
I'm one of the writers who thinks that reading is part of my job. So I'm this week I've been rereading the whole Vorkosigan saga again.
Nice.
So it's like, I must have more Vorkosigan.
Okay, first off, from what the other gentleman said, ditto. I apologize if you've already covered this somewhere else, I just haven't seen it, but Michael and just the Knights, you briefly mentioned that they were more or less based off of Jedi, but what that between them and your just portrayal of Faith, what is your inspiration through that, them and Father Fort Hill, because it's really good.
I was just sort of tired of the only Christians that ever appeared anywhere in books either being raving fanatics or raving hypocrites. Because that was really kind of the only portrayals you ever saw of anybody that was involved in the Christian church. And I didn't dig that. And I wanted to write a paladin. And so I wrote Michael Carpenter in as a paladin the way I thought a paladin should be. So that's kind of where that came from.
Well, just as a Christian, thank you for someone that isn't a hypocrite or a... Thank you.
Oh, well, you're welcome. Justin! How you doing, man?
Pretty good, man. How are you?
I LARP with this guy, so yeah, we're cheating.
Nice.
Those steampunk LARPs he was talking about is one of them.
Yeah.
So. This is settling an argument between me and my brother.
Okay.
Tavi or Tavi?
Oh, Tavi or Tavi?
Tavi.
Tavi.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, and that's...
I'm with you.
I apologize.
I'm with you.
I'll change it. Listen, we'll lie to him, okay? Shh.
Wipe
nobody
that.
Tell his brother.
But thanks, man. And Codex will always be my favorite. I don't read books over again. Like, once I've read a book, I just kind of put it away, unless it's Tolkien or C.S. Lewis from my childhood. But I've read Codex 3 times now.
Wow. Oh, cool.
I absolutely love that series.
So. Oh, thank you, man. Thank you.
Talk to you later.
All right.
Do you feel like it's important for people to pronounce things from the book in a certain way? A lot of authors don't. They're like, well, I don't care.
I think it's more important they enjoy the book.
Yeah.
If you want to say Tavi, go ahead. Go for it.
You have permission from Jim Butcher.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hi there. Big fan.
Oh, thank you.
So the Dresden Files in particular typically have a really kind of fast start. You get the plot established really, really fast. They have a big epic finish. Can you talk a little bit about plotting and how you fill out your act two?
How I fill out what?
Your second act of the book.
Yes, I can. Whenever I'm getting ready to write one of the Dresden Files, you have to understand that when I was learning this stuff, I was not necessarily all that bright, and I'm not all that much smarter now. But when we talked about story arcs, the way I would plan out my story is I would start by drawing a big arc. And I would put the beginning of the story at one end and like the big showdown at the other end. And then at the high point of the arc in the middle, I'd come up with a big scene in the middle that would be kind of my big middle scene, which would be my big flashy special effects thing. My escape from the Death Star scene. And then after that, I would just start filling out points in between. How do I get from here to there? And then how do I get from the top down to the end? With the idea being, when you're writing a story, you kind of want to start at your beginning and you want to build up to that middle. And the middle, that's sort of like the part of the roller coaster where you're going jung, 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 up the hill. And then when you get to the big point in the middle, at that point, the rest of the story should be roller coaster going fast, so that you're not bogging the reader down after you get there. So really, I plan a big flashy bit in the middle. So whatever you can read all of my stories, you could probably go in and find them. But there's a middle event that sets into motion the entire series of events that follows the rest of it. And you know, after you get to the big middle, the rest of it should basically be thrill ride. You know, with a couple of little slow bits as you go around a corner and then hit another dip. But other than that, you know, it's I don't do complicated, man. It's just, you know, beginning, big middle, big showdown at the end.
Right on. Thanks.
No problem. Is what?
No,
Changes was the middle of the entire series. Just so you know. You know, so.
That's a big event.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was the flashy.
Don't tell her.
Hey, no spoilers. No spoilers, Jim Butcher.
No, you've given, you've given up your spoiler card. Yeah, your don't spoil me card.
So I was there at the Fightin' and Writin' panel, and a lot of the other writers on there have some sort of fighting experience or training, and I was wondering if you do, and if you do a martial art, what is it?
I do a polyglot of martial arts because I moved around from place to place for a long time. So I started off in Shorinru, which I took as a kid and learned just a little bit, and then got beat up a lot. I got beat up a lot as a kid. I might have been a little bit mouthy. I started learning Ryukyu Kenpo. After that, I took Taekwondo, I took some Aikido, I took some Kung Fu. I spent a lot of time in Gojo Shoryu, a very down and dirty practical street fighting variant of Gojo Shoryu. There was a lot of stomp on the foot, kick in the knee, sort of martial arts going on there. I've also done considerable fencing. And then I do boffer weapon stuff, which is not actual martial arts, but it's great for footwork. So I mean that's been my experience. I've actually been in a couple of conflicts, nothing huge. I haven't ever had to fight off muggers for my car or something like that. But I've been in altercations, and you know they're at this point it's just like, oh no, I don't want to do that. It's just, it's ugly. It's no fun for anybody. Although it's definitely be more fun to be the guy who is not on the floor afterward. But
were you keeping up at all on Neil Stevenson's Klang project?
No.
The sword fighting project?
Yeah, it's a Subutai Corporation is what he formed around and did a Kickstarter to create a video game for Western martial arts.
Ooh,
so broadsword stuff.
Neat. I did see a video of this girl who won a broadsword tournament pretty recently, and she was awesome.
Yeah.
He's trying to make the perfect motion capture game, video game that mimics true Western martial arts.
Ooh, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I need to buy this game, obviously.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure. Yeah, I'm one of those guys who I'm not good by any means, but I'm good enough for what I need, for what I feel I need in my life. So, you know, it's like, okay, I'm having a good time. That's the important thing about martial arts for me now is to go get some exercise.
Well, if I got into a fantasy writer bar fight, I think I'd want you on my team.
Cool.
Probably, okay. Yeah. I think compared to others.
No.
High draft pick is what she's saying.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Well, maybe. Yeah, I remember talking to a science fiction writer, and he was about 85, and he was a ninth Dan black belt in Aikido.
Wow.
And he was an astrophysicist, and I cornered him to talk about martial arts and zero gravity. He's like, oh, I've never gotten anybody wanted to talk with me about this before. I'm so excited. No one else has ever been interested in this. So we talked about martial arts and zero gravity and started working through some things. And at some point, somebody asked him, during the panel, somebody asked him, well, what's the best martial art? He goes, oh, well, best martial art. And he kind of looks down and he says, Jim, what do you think? And I said, gun. He says, yes, best martial art is gun. He says, followed closely by baseball bat, followed closely by some unarmed style, I don't know which.
Can you say who it was? Who was that?
I don't remember his name, but this was in 2000 or so. So it was, you know, close to 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Cool. But it was in New York.
So obviously I'm a big fan of yours because, I mean,
I wouldn't be here wearing this if I wasn't.
Who are you dressed as?
I lost a bet with Bob. He's making me take him to the burlesque show later.
Right.
Not Hamlet. Okay.
Wait, there's a burlesque show?
At midnight.
Okay.
So my question is, you've mentioned exactly once in the series the Jade Court, and I'm wondering if you have any plans for them later. Not that I want any spoilers, because I like to be properly tortured. And right. Also, I know your wife writes as well. Have you considered maybe doing a collaboration with her?
Well, actually, I got divorced this year. But even if I hadn't, no, there's no chance of... Shannon and I tried to write a play together in our junior year of high school, and we just about stabbed out one another's eyes with our number two pencils, so that wouldn't have gone. I would be a really terrible guy to collaborate with. I can't imagine why anybody would want to do it. But other than that, no. As far as the Jade Court goes... we'll see if we bring them out in the future. I don't know if we really will. It depends on a lot of different things. But really, they're kind of involved in China, and they're really isolationist, which means they stay isolated. So it's
makes sense.
Yeah. So it's possible that we might see something from them later on, but I doubt you'll ever see who they really are.
So when you create a Dresden, the city itself seems to be a character in itself. Like, it has its own little traits, its own little things that it does in a way, you know? Uh-huh. And it's very important for me when I read the story that the world itself has character. So you do that very well. How do you do that?
A lot of that is...
Yeah.
A lot of that is just... A lot of that is just digging into the history of the place and getting in and just trying to learn what you can about it. And doing that, the best way to do that is to go there and start digging into the local books that are written by the local people who actually live there. I mean, the internet is like a really useful tool, but it's not the best one. By all means, the absolute best tool is people who are there who know the place. So, you know, when I started, you know, eventually at some point in my books, I finally started being able to make contact with people who actually lived in Chicago. And I'd be able to say, hey, I need to know, you know, this particular piece of information about Chicago. What can you tell me about it? And I would get answers of, okay, well, I know about this because I went to school here and this was part of the university. And they could tell me all about that part of town. Or I drive by that place on my way to work every morning. Let me take my phone with me and I'll get a bunch of pictures for you. And stuff like that. So it's mostly about you looking at the place and then trying to decide for yourself what it means and then trying to infuse that into the story. But really, I think it happens all by itself if you dig into the history enough and if you bring that history into the story. Sure, man.
You originally, I guess this one isn't on. You originally picked Kansas City, right? And then your instructor talked you out of it?
Yeah, originally it was going to be set in KC, and my instructor told me, no, you can't do that. And I said, why not? She says, like, well, you're already writing a supernatural investigative character. You're already walking hard enough on Laurel Hamilton's toes that you don't need to set your book in Missouri. So find someplace else to set it. And I'm like, okay, where? She's like, anywhere, just not Missouri. I'm like, okay. And she had a globe on her desk. There were four American cities on the globe. New York, and I didn't want to use New York because, you know, superheroes got that all sewn up. I didn't want to use L.A. because then we'd have to do Hollywood stuff because it's L.A. I didn't want to use D.C. because then you have to write politics. Otherwise, why would you set your story in D.C.? And that left the only other city that was on that map, which was Chicago. I said, how about Chicago? She says, fine, Chicago, use it, whatever.
Wait, what map has only four cities?
I know. It's those big old...
A globe.
Oh.
Yeah, a globe. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, a globe. A globe.
I'll show you one someday.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
Hello, Mr. Butchett. I gotta say, I'm a huge fan of your books. I just recently got into them, but I just went straight through every single one of them. I'm just amazed the way you write. Excuse me. Pardon me if this... May I shake your hand, sir?
Certainly.
Thank you so much.
I love your accent. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, also, I want to ask, as a person who's a new writer myself, because I'm... One, the field I'm trying to get is game development. One problem I've noticed, I'm... I'm very, very stuck. I'm stuck in pretty much same three stories. So could you give any advice on how to get out of that situation where you're just permanently, it's not writer's block, but I'm stuck on these same three stories. So,
The same three kind of story structures, or just the same three specific stories?
Same three specific stories. I'm having trouble expanding out to different genres and everything else.
The big jump for me happened when I finally listened to my writing instructor and I started writing a story in first person instead of third person. Because it forces you to take a very different viewpoint into how you're going to tell your story. So that was a big jump for me. You're going to have to find your own. You might have to. What I would consider is, I think probably what really made that difference for me was being forced to design this character that was very different from any of the central characters that I'd used before. And Harry Dresden, when I was designing him, he felt completely awkward and awful and artificial as I was putting him together, because I was putting him together out of defiance for my writing teacher. It's a long story. I wasn't very bright. But by doing it, I mean, it kind of moved me out of my comfort zone, because I had only written Swords and Horses Fantasy before that, and it was pretty much the same Swords and Horses Fantasy story over and over. So you might give that a shot. Try writing something that is out of your genre, that is out of your comfort zone, and see if that knocks anything loose. Because that was what really made the huge difference for me.
Thank you so much, Miss Butcher.
Sure, man. You're welcome.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much.
I'm actually going to try that, because I have also had the problem of getting stuck in stories, and I think it is because I've been in writing in third person. So maybe I'm going to try that too.
Should he pick a fight in an online forum and get
and take a foolish bet?
Yeah.
What kind of moron would do that? No.
I already made the new bet that you have to write an urban fantasy chef story.
The urban fantasy chef?
Yes.
Actually, I did have an idea for an urban fantasy chef, but he's a ghoul, so. For the Dresden,
it's an acquired
it's
taste.
Actually not for the Dresden Files, it's for the spin-off series for the Dresden Files that might do one day.
Cool. So. All right, it looks like we have one more question.
Well, two more, because I'm going to be greedy since I'm at the end of the line.
All right.
Part one, Veronica, you might want to cover yours as a minor spoiler alert here.
Oh, crap.
Where on earth, Mr. Butcher, did the Santa Claus beatdown scene come from?
I don't know, man. It just seemed obvious.
I mean, did you not get something you wanted as a kid? You really wanted that Red Ryder BB gun?
I'm just saying, man. It just seemed obvious.
All right, fair enough.
Spoilers. Done?
Yeah, done with spoilers. And I was wondering if perhaps you could give us 10, 15, 30 paragraphs about the next book, the release date, something like that.
Okay, the next book was due this morning. it's not quite there yet. It's mostly done. I'll have it turned in the next couple of weeks. The next book is called Skin Game. In it, you can actually, I've read the first four chapters online. You can look it up on YouTube. I probably wouldn't have chosen to have them out there, because those were the very first rough drafts, but somebody videotaped me and YouTubed it, so be it. The basic premise of the story is, Mab, who owes a debt, loans Harry Dresden out to pay back her debt to Nicodemus Arcleone, who is knocking over a vault which belongs to Hades, and Dresden is part of his crew. And it's a crew of bad people. Of bad, 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 bad people. And Dresden is naturally somewhat outraged about this, and says, you know that this guy is gonna stab me in the back just as soon as he possibly can. And Mab's like, well, of course he is. And I expect superior and more creative treachery on your part just as soon as you've paid back my debt.
Nice.
And he's like, I can't believe you're asking me to do this. And she's like, what? I would have loved this game when I was a kid. What's wrong with you? And by the way, if you do it, then I'll let that thing in your head that's going to kill you get removed. And you better hurry, because you've only got 3 days. Okay. So that's the story.
Thank you.
Very welcome.
All right. Oh, we have one more? Oh. Go ahead.
Thank you. Jim, ditto. Tom, unfortunately, my brother Reggie wasn't able to be here today, but he is a huge fan of all of your tech podcasts, and thanks. I wanted to make sure that he knew that he was here, at least verbally.
Tell him I said hey.
I will. Everyone has mentioned a lot about the writing process, a lot about authors that have inspired them, but I'm actually a really big audio fan. A new podcast, so yay.
Hey.
With readers like James Marsters, for example, on the Dresden Files, he really brings the character to life, in my opinion, and I was wondering if there are many readers or narrators that have been particularly inspiring for you, or anything that you could recommend of, because I've actually listened to books because of the readers, not necessarily because I was actually interested in the story, but just to branch out, try new things, because I know they're really good quality readers.
For me, I've always been focused on the written stuff, because I'm real hard of hearing in one ear, so listening is kind of hard for me. So you'll see me when somebody's talking to me, you'll see me do this sometimes, and that's so I can put my good ear in their direction. So really, I've always been focused on the written stuff. When they came to ask me for a reader for my books, basically my participation in that was them saying, we want to do an audiobook, and I heard, we want to buy your family's health insurance. Okay, yay. Then they said, we want to have James Marsters read, and I heard, we want Spike from Buffy the Vampire Slayer to endorse your novels, and I said, yay, and that was kind of the limit of my experience. I occasionally get a chance to pick somebody. Like for the Alara books, they gave me a short list of folks for me to pick from, and I picked who I thought would do the best job. Other than that, it's a very sophisticated area that a lot of people put a lot of work in, and I don't know a whole lot about it. So, real quick, one more thing I just want to say: the first guy who stood up to ask me a question that was critical of me, dude, that took mad courage to do that in a room full of Dresden fans. And props to you for doing that. And seriously, it's a valid topic for discussion. I'd love to do it at some point. So,
all right. Well, Jim Butcher, thank you very much for joining us here at DragonCon. We really appreciate it. Let's give him a round of applause.
Thanks, guys.
And if you are a first-time listener, if you want to follow all of our stuff, we are at swordandlaser.com. All of our discussions happen over on Goodreads. And if you want to call and leave us a voicemail, the phone number is 415-7-SWORD-6. We'll see you guys next year. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.